This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
All right, let's do this, shall we? You ready?
Yeah.
Runners, take your marks.
Get set. Over off. Welcome to another Indie Comic Book Noise.
That was great. Now, Steve Raker here from the Comic Book Bunker, along with Kevin Whirlwindex, Phil, and Andrew the L.A. Rabbit. That's right, the gang's all here for Indie Comic Book Noise number 349.
You hear that? You hear that, guys? He treats me with respect and doesn't call me the Ottawa Otter.
Do we put Steve's head into a giant jar to produce this episode? Did you get on that, Andrew, or no?
Hey, I'm just glad Steve's back.
Okay.
Yep, I'm back, ready to take this semi-seriously again. But thanks for keeping the ship afloat while it was shorthanded.
If you want to call it that.
We had a lot of fun. We went a little overboard.
And we are, it looks like, a few episodes away from our first annual Halloween anniversary episode.
Yay!
You guys ready to read some horror comics?
Always.
Probably.
I never don't.
You guys can find us on Twitter if you want to comment. You can like our Facebook page and comment there. Give us an iTunes review, maybe. Have we gotten any of those? I haven't even looked.
Not last time I checked.
And there's IndieComicBookNoise.com, which also should have a link to our forum thread from the 11 o'clock comics boards on it. So there you go. What have you guys been reading? It's been so long.
You must have a huge stack.
Like
a massive stack.
Can I tell you something that's just goes with the word massive? It's just huge.
Not the massive?
No. It's the giant-sized Kung Fu Bible stories.
The one everyone didn't know what I was talking about in the previous episode.
How great is that title, though, right?
It is.
It's an Image Treasury edition. It's treasury-sized format, square-bound and old, big like the old treasuries of my youth.
Sounds pretty interesting, because I tried to track down some treasury stuff, but you know, sometimes it just doesn't go your way.
This one's not for kids, though. It's more like a teens plus. It's got blood and guts and nudity and a cynical satire in it.
Well, if it's Bible stories, that wouldn't be for kids at all anyway.
No, that's just the title.
Okay.
It's like an anthology book. Big, giant, like I said, treasury-sized, oversized thing. It's got a Eric Larson, Bruce Timm cover, which is a character jam of all of the characters within, or at least an assortment of them. It starts off with an 8-pager written and drawn by Bruce Timm. That's called Secret Crisis on Ultimate Earth. This could totally be, you know, it's got a bunch of analogs. It reads like a not brand Eck or a crazy parody, but totally brutal and really funny and tongue-in-cheek. There's 8-page Adam Warren Empowered tale. You guys read The Empowered at all?
I've been trying to start it, but I just haven't yet, but I'd like to.
Yeah, I need to read the first volume I bought, like, maybe 2 years ago.
I read the Brandon Graham one that he co-starred on.
Oh, Brandon Graham. I should have picked that up.
I'm on the fourth, I think, or fifth volume of Empowered.
Aren't those...
They're good.
Yeah,
they
aren't those
fast.
Like in the hardcovers now?
Maybe.
And isn't it that she gets her like clothes ripped and she gets more powerful?
No, less. Uh-oh. Her suit provides her power and she gets less powerful as it gets ripped.
Okay.
So then she
ends
up getting stuck in lousy situations and positions. It's
sounds up my alley.
It really is. There are a lot of alleys to be up. But it never really gives away the goods. It's all, suggested and everything's covered with a wink, wink and a nod, nod. But it's really, cleverly presented the way that its atmosphere is. There are two 5-pagers in here by Tom Scholey. One Astronomus, and the other called Eight Opus, Destroyer of Worlds. Both have big double size, double page, like big spreads. So imagine that in a tabloid, even though I only had it on my iPad. An 8-page Ryan Ottley written and drawn story called Snowman Slaughter. Dudes, this one has... go ahead.
This book sounds amazing so far.
It's great. This one has these ice this one part where there's these like big ice giant demons, and they all like announce their names when they are first presented, and one of them's carrying a big weapon and he calls himself Chillax. Yes. And another one is Iglucifer. Oh man, I was rolling.
Someone needs to name their like computer equipment, like their iPod or the router or something. These names.
Iglucifer.
You said Ryan Ottley wrote that one?
Yeah, and drew it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I love the stuff he works on his own. He does. He's pretty funny.
And Eric Larson, who it seems like was the ringleader here, has a 21-page story of Jack Champion. It's his origin story. It starts out like a Stand By Me group of kids, and they encounter these, like, Kirby monsters and, like, a secret in the one kid's family, and a new hero is born. Jack Champion. And then it ends with a Andy Kuhn, an 8-pager by him called Frankenstein of Mars, which is just what it sounds like it would be. And there's 4 fantasy pinups from Art Adams on top of it all.
Mm.
Yeah. Giant-sized kung fu Bible stories from Image.
I gotta get it. So this is out in print right now?
This is out in print, and it's in digital. I have it in digital, but it started, I think, like it was very hard to get. It was just a release from San Diego Comic-Con or mail order or something, but now I think it is distributed.
Cool.
Yeah. Who's got something else?
Well, a lot of books I have are stuff you guys have, so I'll just go ahead and throw one out now.
Go for it.
Well, I believe me and Andrew read a book called Wild's End.
Yes, that was from Boom Studios, featuring the talents of Dan Abnett writing and Colbard. You may remember from the new Deadwardians.
Yes.
I don't know if we discussed that book or not. That was a Vertigo book, so it might have slipped through the cracks.
We actually haven't discussed much Vertigo at all, I don't think, yet.
That's because they're big, too.
Yes, big, too. So anyways, but that's the creative team, for those of you familiar with that book. But they're now at Boom Studios. And what we have is a series of anthropomorphic animals.
Well, it's Wind in the Willow mixed with aliens, or Martians Attack, or whatever.
Isn't that in War of the Worlds?
Or War of the Worlds.
War of the Worlds, yeah. So we have the anthropomorphic English animals in sort of a quaint village setting. Maybe that Simon Pegg movie.
World's End?
Yeah. No, no, the one before that where he's the police officer.
Okay.
Man, this is a brilliant moment for Andy's brain to explode.
I can't remember. No.
But for those of you familiar with, it's one of the Coronetto trilogy. But it reminded me of that sort of village, like a quaint, sort of everyone knows each other. And what happens is there's a retired military man. Well, man, he's a dog, but we're going to use the anthropomorphic terms. And he moved into the village. And then the local sort of elders are visiting around and invite him to the town meeting held at the local pub. And one of them is a giant bunny. He's like the head barrister and kind of runs the town. Mr. Errant. So he, and during this, one of the local town drunks, this fox, claims that he encountered the alien. How am I doing so far, Phil? Other than not remembering any titles.
Nope, that sounds about right. There's also a town drunk. Or two drunks that go around, a fox, and I'm not sure what type of animal the other one is.
And what happens is, and it opens with that, I would say maybe like a stoat or a weasel, I'm going to guess.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, he comes to the poor end. And then the nice part at the end is they have a little map of kind of the village.
Yeah.
And you can see where the sort of outbreak came.
Which was really good because it really helps with the story to know where everything is happening.
Right. And then the so this new dog is going to go search for this mysterious thing, even though the rabbit was like, you can't really trust this guy. He's just gets all boozy and sees things. The dog's like, I got a feeling. And so he's off. Now, this is part one of six.
Mm-hmm.
I did get the first one. I'm probably going to trade weight. It's not any knock against the book itself.
Well, I had a bit of a problem with the art. I found, the rabbit you were talking about. Like, his mouth, like his face is always the exact same stone face expression. His mouth is the same size, never moves. And I find some of the other animals are like that too, like the dog. It's compared to the dead Duardians, I found the art. I didn't really like the art in this at all. Like, I thought it was very boring to look at some of the pages. Just some giant heads most of the time.
Yeah, the action components are few and far between. I mean, other than...
Maybe that's why. Maybe it's just too much, I guess, too much of a setup issue, so...
The, you know, obviously there's a couple characters that come to a grisly end, but that's kind of it's the beginning of the outbreak. The other thing is at the end, they have sort of like a fake town newspaper with the little ads and everything that reminded me of the old Jethro Tull album, Thick as a Brick, came with also a fake newspaper in it.
Really well done, too.
For those of you that are old enough to remember, well, I guess albums are back. For those of you that remember old-timey music, Jethro Tull was an old-timey band.
I don't know if you're going back far enough.
They've got a great Christmas album there with their Celtic sound, like Christmas, New Year's, holiday.
Bah humbug.
Very cool.
Let's save Christmas for later when I'm tortured with it.
That's a very tangent. Just for, like I said, old people that remember. I like those sort of fake back materials that put you in the mood, sort of. Particularly, as Phil noted, it's not the most super detailed art.
I just find, the backgrounds are just colors, basically. Like, I don't know. I feel like I'd want to see a bit more detail, maybe, in this book.
Yeah, but it's got a map.
Yeah, and the map is good, too.
I'm a sucker for maps.
Yeah. Like I say, it really helps with the story to know, because there's like someone drew on it, like showing where the events was and everything.
And does it hint at other places yet to be explored or presented?
There are other places yet marked down, so I imagine that's they'll cool. be hitting there at some
point. What also lets you know that this happened far away from like the main body, and that's part of the skepticism of, you know, like this, it didn't land in the middle of the little village, it landed out in the outskirts, so it's going to be slowly encroaching.
Well, plus, there's another little village close by, so I imagine that'll have something to do with it, too.
The real reason he bought it, though, is because there was a rabbit.
There is nothing wrong with that.
A big rabbit that everyone gathered around in the center of town.
Yeah, he runs the thing, you know. That should be.
I guess he was the mayor.
Yeah, it seems like, I don't know the town structure, but he was the, whether formal or informal, he's kind of the leader of the...
And then the dog seemed like the cop to me when I was reading it.
Yeah, well, I think he's just like a retired, you know, like the retired serviceman with like the... He's seen some action and now he's out of it.
Rabbit action.
So... That seems to me to be the... Yeah, that's a pretty common trope. You know what I mean? The one guy that's like, you know, he's been in it, and now he's trying to just get out and have a calm, regular life.
He's been there, and he's come back, and he's got some stories and some hardened side to him that he can't reveal in his day-to-day life.
Yeah, he doesn't want to tell anybody, because, you know, that would... He's got to keep it inside.
Kevin, what have you been reading? You're too quiet.
Am I? I was reading Titan.
Okay, now you're too noisy. No, I'm just kidding.
What? Wow. I come back and this is a treatment I get.
It's about time.
Let's hear about Titan.
Wait, you come back? Where did you go?
Yeah, where did you go?
Into manga land.
Please.
Oh, jeez. Yes, I was reading Titan by, I'm gonna probably butcher this name, Francois Vigneault, and it's published by Family Style, a member of Press Gang, and this was the first issue. And the reason it's called Titan is because it's like an outer space thing, like the moon Titan. So like some dudes are going to this planet because there's planet. There I go. What am I calling it, a planet? It's not a planet. It's just like Pluto. Please. It's a moon. Anyways, the moon of Titan.
That's one of no the moon.
Yes, but that's a this space guy's station. Like an inspector. So it's been some time since there's been like one of these dudes checking the place out. But I don't know if this is where they got the name from, because it's weird that they're going to a moon called Titan, but there's also these people that have been genetically altered for like their harsh conditions and low gravity and everything, and they're like way bigger than everyone else, and they're called Titans. So I'm like, oh, that's kind of weird. But anyhow, there seems to be something bubbling under the surface between like the worker Titans and the regular people. Because they have like 50,000 Titans that work on this moon, but there's only like 500 people.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, so right away when you hear something like that, you're like, if anything goes sideways, that's not going to be good.
Like, those odds might come into play further down the pike here.
Exactly. So there's like also this stuff like union regulations where they need like 24 hours notice, and there's like another 7 hours still to go, but the union boss from that's one of the Titans still wants to see the inspector and everything. So you get sort of like introduced to a few of the Titans, like life on the place. He gets like to see his headquarters, and then, you know, he's checking the place out sort of like unofficially, getting some grub and everything. And then he's like, wow, this place isn't doing so well. Like your equipment on this moon is like, should be in a museum. And he's like, if I can't get this place like running more efficiently, it's like going to be closed down. And then there's going to be 50,000 angry Titans on this moon. So yeah, things, go badly. And, it looks like there might be some fisticuffs going on. But, like, the whole situation is sort of, like, smoothed over, I guess, until later on. And then there might be some suspicious stuff going on between a few of the members. Because I sort of wondered, like, it's not like people are making eyes at each other, but I'm like, I wonder if there's any relations between, like, the Titans and the regular people. And that's sort of how it ends. And this is two parts to, I'm not sure how big of a story it would be, but you can read this on studygroupcomics.com as well. Hmm. And it's it has a few colors to it. It's like a black, white, I guess sort of red, pinkish. Like it's not like full color type of thing. It's like they choose like a few things to use.
So is it like, are you reading this? Is it like a webcomic or?
Yeah, like I assume it is, but I'd rather read it in print. So it's smaller too. It's more like a more like mini comic size or digest size.
Okay, that's what I was trying to get. Like, yeah, but the aspect ratio.
Yeah, but it's still stapled like a regular comic and everything. And the art styles, I guess, more like a cartoony thing, but it's just not super realistic. But I enjoyed this. This is probably, like, sometimes when you read indie comics, I'm like, oh, I get into this. I'm like, is this going to be a cool indie comic that I'm going to enjoy? Or is this going to be, like, some alternate art comic type of thing where I'm going to be, like, struggling through or something? But when I saw the cover with, like, the Titan is, like, behind a human, but in their helmets, like the world, like the Earth or another planet is like reflected in the helmets, and you know a lot of good sci-fi stuff going on the cover. So I'm like, well, that's a good signal to me. It's not like some dude hanging out on the beach smoking or something. Like, give me some sci-fi cover, and I'm like, oh, okay, maybe that'll be good. And it was.
Did the Titans ever get attacked on?
Almost. Like there was some stuff brewing, but it was sort of diffused.
Oh, there's, man, some I was really hoping for Attack on Titan.
I know you were. I thought of that. I'm like, I'm going to talk about Titan, and I'm like, who's the first person that's going to say, hey, is this Attack on Titan? I'd be like, no.
Well,
no,
I did pick up the first volume of that, so you might hear about it again.
Be interesting.
I got a quick one for you. It is was a one-shot that just came out a few months ago from Fantagraphics. That was called DKW, and it too, it too is available digitally as well now. But I picked it up actually from Comixology when they had the Fantagraphics sale not too long ago. It's like a one shot. I think it runs about $5 or something along those lines. But it's DKW, and the DKW is Ditko, Kirby, and Wood.
Oh, that's a good group.
Yeah. And it is written and drawn by Sergio Poncione. And there's an introduction from Blake Bell, who knows his Ditko for sure. And what it is, it's like the you're not presented with it until the end, but the guide in the story is the author and the artist himself. So he's drawn himself into the story, and he's sitting there, and someone knocks on his door, and it's a young artist with a portfolio who wants a portfolio review. And he gets a portfolio review from our guide here, and he starts talking about DK and W and how this young guy has never heard of any of them, and he starts to talk about them. And as he talks about each letter for each of them, the young aspiring artist has a vision, and the vision is very in the artistic style of the artist in question. So all of a sudden you get a big Ditko-y D, and then it goes off into this Ditko tangent where you not only explore their story a little bit and their impact, it by no means is even try to be comprehensive in any kind of a way. It's more of just a few images and a couple of anecdotes to give you the feeling of that artist and his impact on the comics world. But you also get the visual style of that artist. Poncione draws some awesome Ditko stuff, and then gets into the Kirby, and then gets into the Wally Wood. There's some neat little somewhat whimsical twists involved. There's some nice text biographies of each of the artists in the back. Real cool little package.
So were characters sweating with the Ditko?
There were floating heads. You bet.
There was a guy with wearing a hat from the 50s.
The Phantom Strangers there, Mr. A, Speedball, and Machine Man, and the Spidey cast, and Eternity, and Charlton sweaty faces and stuff. And they go up and they ring Ditko's doorbell, and he basically tells them to fuck off, you know? Great.
That ties into a book I've got, actually.
Let's hear it.
I am still I've slowed down on Kickstarter, but I'm still kickstarting it. And one of the more recent ones I got was from Robin Snyder and Steve Ditko.
Oh, cool.
He still is putting out these packages on through Kickstarter that she runs. And the last one came with Mr. A number 15.
Nice.
Which has some, like, a new cover. They also throw plenty of kind of these weird little newsletters and it's kind of essays from the last few years.
That's her stuff, right? The comics? It's her fanzine?
The comics are, but the essays are from him. So what they usually are like, they're split into, like, two columns. And they're copyrighted usually, like, from 2012, 2013, that time frame.
Oh, so they're newer ones. Because he's been writing essays through her fanzine for decades.
Yes. And you throw in a couple extra bucks and they throw in some old ones that they sent you.
I remember.
But these are his, they're called the four-page series. And they're just like he writes. So he wrote, you know, one about people coming up to him and asking him, and then something about Jack Kirby's five pages of Spider-Man. Just all this kind of interesting stuff that's from the new. And then the Mr. A has what I believe to be, like I said, a new cover and some other stuff, but it's basically a lot of the same package material. But that's fine with me. A lot of the Mr. A stuff was coming out when I was out of comics in the 90s. So he's...
Mr. A was from the late 60s, early 70s, though.
Yes, yes, but this was originally intended to be come out in 1990.
Gotcha.
Who's this Mr. A? Could you educate me on that?
Mr. A is Steve Ditko's own creation, and the protagonist, his big thing is like A is A. Like, there is a right and a wrong.
Mm-hmm. No gray. And
so that's where the Mr. A comes from. So he has this business card he sends to the bad guys. And it can go, and it's white and black, and it can go from white to black. And it's a lot of the kind of old-timey storytelling where it ends up with the twist ending a little bit, but it's kind of interesting. His storytelling is like almost like theater or poetry because it's just these weird, it's a ton. I mean, he has a few splash pages, but it's a lot of panels, and it tends to be like these quick cuts.
It's like philosophy. You know?
Yeah, you'll get an overview of the city and just different balloons of people's thoughts.
What company did it used to print with?
The first one, according to him, Mr. A first appeared in Wally Wood's Wit's End number 3 in 1967.
Right. Yep.
Since then, you know, it's been all over the place.
Yep.
With different self-published
he's the question. Companies. He's what the question was originally supposed to be. He looks like the question, and he's harsher than the question though. The famous thing is in the original Mr. A bit of him having a there's like a teacher or some woman who was the victim, and she's hanging off of a building, and so is the bad guy, and she's like waffly about like, you know, Mr. A choosing to save him versus her or whatever, and he just totally saves her, lets the bad guy fall, and he's like, I should have let you fall just to, like, you know, teach you stupid liberals a lesson that, you know, it's not all, you know, sometimes you have to think about yourself and your own, you know. Also, it's just dripping with his personal philosophies, and not only in the text, which is difficult to really follow as a narrative sometimes, but visually too. He goes into weird collages at times, and the text is spinning, and sometimes it just seems like a Ditko fever dream, but it's all black and white, and he's returned to the character on and off over the decades. Years. Yeah.
And this story is pretty, it lacks some of those more fanciful, though I think he was pretty good on this Mr. A. Like, some of his other work, yeah, it really, you know, with the spiraling text and the weird collages. I mean, this one ends with that, but the story really is... it's easy to follow, and it's straightforward. But that's it cool. Just, like I said, it feels like an old-timey play where people sometimes kind of state their intentions openly. And it's a fun... He's still got chops for telling stories. I mean, obviously, this is an older one. But I like the... As you guys know, I'm always a fan of, like, the lots of little panels to tell your story technique. I mean, it's not like Superior Foes of Spider-Man, lots of panels. But, you know, there's lots of 9 panels, and I'd say it probably averages 7 or 8, somewhere like that. And the black and white suit him particularly well, again, giving it the feel. And Mr. A is wearing, like, a suit, and he's got the hat and everything. But I just... as long as they keep putting these things out, I'll keep throwing them a couple bucks and getting the 4-page series stuff. That's where it really goes off the hook. The little essays are kind of, they're almost like, in a way, sort of a cross between a column and a poem. Like, my favorite one ends, a newspaper article, a reporter's report from 2012. Like, the end of it is a journalist... comma, all non-objective claimers, comma, are just sound waves and self-contradiction zeros, claiming, demanding to be solid numbers. 0:00:00:00:00 will always be 0. And I'm like, this stuff is pretty, like, I'm not going to say I understand it all, but it's pretty, like, I'm like, I don't know. I just find it heartening that he's out there doing his gig and making it happen and being true to his own thing and getting content. And I would highly suggest people, you know, these things are really cheap on Kickstarter. Like, it's not like you're paying
they're good deals.
$50 or anything. And it's just fun stuff. I know a lot of people are going to be like, what? I don't want some crazy old guys rambling. But give me a chance, man. Don't be so judgmental.
I'm sorry. I'll try not to be.
Kevin.
You want more craziness?
Please step to the front of the class.
You've read two things, Kevin?
Please work this out on the board.
I've read more than that. Most of it wasn't indie, though, so. Yeah. Anyhow, this might be a little disco, Ditko-esque, in a way. I don't know.
Disco Ditko.
But there's no like title on the front cover. It's like on the back cover.
Oh, my gosh. You read it backwards, don't you?
No.
Here
no.
it comes. It's, oh, okay.
It's just done that way for whatever reason. I don't know. It's a cool cover, though. I don't know. It kind of looks like part of the cover is cardboard. It's kind of strange. It's like, because the title character, who's never mentioned in the story, but I know who he is from. I know, weird. It's from Project Romance, put out by Romance? Maybe it wasn't in Romance. I know he was in Project Superior, anyways, put out by Adhouse Books, an anthology. But the story started in there. And then I think there was another issue or something like that, a Secret Voice, and then it didn't go anywhere. And now it's back after many years. But it's by Zach Soto. And it's this dude that sort of looks like an invisible man or that guy from Casanova where his face is all bandaged up. And he wears glasses over that and he has a cape. And then lots of pouches around his waist because, you never know what you're going to get involved in. And some boots and a sword. But there is this little thing at the beginning that tells you, oh, this is an official accounting of his holiest, Dr. Isaiah Galapos. And the passages from the records of Dr. General Flynn Elsa. Anyhow. So, yeah, after you get over the cover, it's like you open it up and there's like another cover.
I like because that. The cover, I like a couple covers when they do that.
Yeah, because the cover is sort of more like construction paper, and then the cover inside it, the pages inside are much thinner. It's more like, I guess if you were to buy construction paper as a kid, you know, like the wrapper that holds the paper is always stronger than the pages inside. So it's sort of like that. But the second cover is like this dot pattern, yellow, purple kind of thing. And it has this troll with, like, earrings and all these other, like, tribal markings that looks angry. But anyways, it's the journey of our hero into the underworld where he sees, like, all these trolls doing the stuff. Like, thinking like Lord of the Rings, like the dwarves and everything, how they were all mining and had bridges and, you know, all this crazy construction stuff. So all these dudes are, like, working, doing this stuff, and they have, like, this pulley system with, like, barrels and stuff to bring up this white liquid, it looks like. But I'm like, it kind of looks like gold, but I'm like, yellow, white liquid. I'm like, I'm like, I hope this isn't something else.
I hope this isn't biological.
Exactly. Because I'm like, you never know. Like, how would you know?
I'd know.
You'd know? Like, it could be, like, coming out of a bee, and it's like they bottle it as some kind of slurm drink, and then Fry's drinking it on Futurama, and he says, you know where that comes from, right? So, it made me think of that anyways, just weird tangent.
I love that episode.
It's a great episode. But anyways, the hero goes to see the troll king, the Lord Thermal? I don't know how you pronounce some of these guys' names. But he's kind of concerned about forces. Like, he has this little map, and he's, like, showing you, well, You can't really see the map the way I should say map, but it's not like an impressive map, like not a, like a map that you would enjoy, Steve. Like you can, you, it's not that cool of a map. But he names all the places that are like on this map, and this guy called the Smog Emperor is like moving through all these territories and taking them over and everything, and he pretty much destroys the area. Like, he strips the land, uses all the resources, pollutes everything. So he might reach the this troll kingdom. So the hero of our story is sort of looking for help or trying to warn these troll guys about that. But things don't go well. isn't that how all stories are? You get the story, and then you're like, at some point, things don't go well. There has to be some kind of rising action or whatever. So these troll guys are just like, oh, we're cool enough, you know, we're good enough, we're awesome enough, we're not really that concerned. But it's what's interesting, too, about when these troll guys are talking, like, the one guy, it seems like he's sort of like Black Bolt. Like, he talks, but it's all, like, weird, scratchy, scribbly stuff. You don't understand what he's saying. But all the other trolls understand what he's saying and speak in normal English, it seems like. So one guy's here interpreting. But anyways, like, they're not going to help out. So this hero guy, he's, like, messed up in the head or whatever, and he starts freaking out, and the artwork starts going, like, real nutso. Like the panels start breaking off into weird shapes, and the artwork gets real sketchy, all this purple and orange, and it's just a lot of scribbles on the page, and you think, oh, this artwork's getting, like, like sort of like something children would draw, but he's freaking out. And he takes his sword out, and he starts slashing, like, something that's he thinks is there. And unfortunately, he slashes the arm off one guy that was trying to, like, calm him down. And he's like, oh, this is not going to go well. Not this again. And then you have an interlude to another story in the middle. Which is kind of strange. But it's like a skull-headed guy, and he's looking for someone, and there's just a lot of different colors are used. That's kind of a weird story where they're just searching for someone in a town that they cannot find. And then you get to, like, the second issue of Secret Voice, of this volume 2, where things have not gone well. This guy doesn't have a hand anymore. Blood's going all over the place. So then all these trolls are, like, after our hero of the story, and he's, like, trying to get away, using all the pulley systems and everything in here.
And is this, like, comic-sized?
This is, I would say, let me see. This is a little oversized.
And does Soto put them out himself, or is it published by?
I don't see who it's published. Oh, yeah, it's same press gang. But it's, you can also get it at Study Group Comics. So maybe they all publish to the same place. I'm not sure.
Sounds like something I'd like to.
Yeah, like, It's really interesting. I really like it. And same thing with the art style. And then this, one of the troll guys, the cool thing is he looks like he's about to hack something up here. And it's like this little thing comes out of his throat. And it turns into like a spit golem. It's like this giant clay spit monster. So that's pretty much like the tale for this issue, as this guy's trying to get away, and he uses some of his powers. Like, there's a little opening in the bandages for, like, air to come out of, and he can do certain things with that. But it appeals to my love of, like, underground caverns and monsters and all that type of cool stuff.
What is the Study Group? Is that, like, an online store I can get independent comics, like the physical?
Yeah, it says keep reading. Like, at the end of every issue, it says keep reading the Secret Voice online for free every Sunday at studygroupcomics.com. I'm like, that's awesome. They're usually at, like, TCAF or something like that. You see a whole table of stuff.
Phil was asking how you get...
Oh, man. Like, it just... Like, everything at that table looks like something I'd be interested in, but pretty much.
I think Phil was asking about getting print copies.
Yeah.
To translate from Phil to Kevin.
I think
I would have to go there, but I assume that if they have them free online, that they also have a like some kind of store mm-hmm. storefront type.
Because it sounds like something I'd want, but you know me, I want the print ones. So
yeah, well, that's why I got the print ones too. And they also have stuff like by Farrell, Dalrymple, and Michael DeForge, and stuff like that too. So all cool stuff.
Give us something else, Phil.
Well, actually, before I do that, I think we have to talk about something you read because it leads into mine, Luther Strode.
Oh, I like Luther Strode.
Long in the teasing.
I've been waiting forever for you to talk about these because I love this, the one I want to talk about.
Who read Luther Strode?
I did.
You did?
I did. Yeah.
All right.
Andrew didn't?
Andrew, no? Andrew turned off his microphones because he probably had too loud a traffic going on outside his window.
I read both volumes.
Same here. The first was from 2011 and 12. It was The Strange Talent of Luther Strode. And the second was from last year into this year, which was The Legend of Luther Strode.
And yeah, so if you look at it in the comic store, I know for me I had a little trouble because they were actually completely spread out. Like they, one was under S and one was under L.
Sure.
For me.
Okay.
Both.
Yeah, I've read these years apart.
Both by Image Comics, written by Justin Jordan, and art by Trad Moore.
Love the art.
The basic idea here is it's like exploring the foibles of someone who like comes upon like a boatload of cash but didn't earn it kind of thing. It's like what would happen if one of those Charles Atlas types ads really worked and turned somebody into the perfect physical specimen, right?
Mm-hmm. Isn't that like the perfect idea for a comic?
It's that in you know, what would the realistic reaction be? You wouldn't put on tights and go off and fight bad guys necessarily. And Luther, he's a good kid, but he only gets great power. He doesn't get wisdom to go along with it. So he's forced into some really tough decisions and then having to deal with their ramifications. He's trying to get the girl that he likes. He's got this crazy bearded pursuer after him, and there is tons and tons of, as the author Justin Jordan calls, sweet ultra-violence.
Mm-hmm. And that's the truth.
Yeah, but I don't think it's, like, it's not super realistic, so.
No.
Like, even though it's ultra-violence, it's not as grisly as it could be.
Trad Moore's artwork is.
No, it's more like grindhousey, kind of.
It's so kinetic, and I know we've used that word before to describe that type of where the bodies and the figures are sort of stretched out to show the motion on the page. And here he makes his characters at times even like really sharp, like in tune with the story. Again, it is very unrealistically over the top, violent and bloody, where you're pulling people's entrails out and strangling them with it, and they're coming back from that, if you can imagine that. But just Luther and the bad guy, unfortunately, Luther's friends and family get all sorts of fucked up throughout the story.
There's definitely some shocking stuff near the end of the book.
In the finale of the first series, Luther faces his nemesis, but it really costs him big time. The ending's, it's just horrible.
Mm-hmm.
It's a true tragedy. The hero apparently commits suicide at the end. Good thing there was a sequel, because I don't know how I would have felt if that was the whole thing.
Well, there is a third one coming out, too.
Yeah, well, the thing was, they had never intended there to be a sequel, even, but it made so much cash that they were like, we got to keep this thing going. This was people liked this a lot.
Okay, I didn't think it did well.
So they made the second one, The Legend of Luther Strode, and that has like the players all being reintroduced sometime after, and some of them in truly surprising fashion, like how the girl comes back and what her position is. The bearded dude is still an issue coming after him. He learns a little bit more about where his powers kind of come from and stuff. And there's this even worse villain, though, this like mummified psycho super slasher dude in a black coat.
Who's actually a really cool character. I won't reveal who, but
crazy dude. And he takes out a whole mall. He like locks the doors to a mall and just like wipes out everybody who's inside.
But it's someone you do not want to go up against.
And they're all like when Luther comes in, and they're all like posed on the fountains and all over like the mall, you know, walkways.
Oh,
and stuff,
that mall
all the dead
was a
people.
Great scene.
Crazy.
The thing I liked about the second volume is after the first issue, it was just one giant action scene.
Yeah.
Like
completely.
Then I think you know where I fall on which one I liked more.
I think I liked I liked them both equally. I love them. I liked them both.
I liked the first one more because I think I was more into discovering the mythology and there was more characters and stuff like that. So
the second one was a little more intense, I found, though, just because it was...
Yeah, but it sort of reminded me of like some kind of manga, too, where they would just have a fight scene go on for like 500 pages. Like, that's fine, but at some point I'm like, yeah, are we going to get back to like... some sort of story.
But there's so much weight to what's going on, even though there's action going on, that it's like life or death constantly because the people around him are mortal. And, man, he, you know, in the first one, he just had to deal with, like, how fucked up it can be to have the powers and make decisions and how weird positions you can be put in. By someone who's being more thoughtful and is more wise than you. And in this one, he acts a little bit more responsibly about having his power. He shows like a little bit of moral responsibility to take out the bad guy and stuff, which I thought was kind of a little bit of an evolution of the character. The big showdown finale, I thought was, I mean, even though it was one big action sequence, it really wasn't until the last issue that the big showdown happens. And it was horrific.
It was epic.
And like you said, next year there's going to be Legacy of Luther Strode.
Yeah, which I can't even imagine how they're going to make it even crazier or even more gory or whatever. It's going to be quite the tale. And I'm pretty sure that's it. I'm pretty sure this finishes it. What I understood.
A trilogy makes sense.
Is Trad Moore still going to be the artist? You know, he's got that, obviously.
It's got to be.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
His work on Ghost Rider currently.
I can't imagine.
He's not on Ghost Rider anymore.
And Ghost Rider got canceled too, I think.
Oh, that was the Ghost Rider artist?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's crazy because I did not like the art in Ghost Rider, but I loved this stuff.
Yeah, that's weird.
Maybe it's because all the red from the blood and everything. Maybe it's the colors too that made me like it, but...
Yeah, you can tell he has a style. It's not like a generic, like, oh, this is straightforward type of thing.
So what did this lead you into?
Well, this leads into it because of Justin Jordan's new book, which I guess you didn't notice.
I thought you were going to lead into Shadow Man or something.
No.
You know, you have to do your, like, Valiant checkup every episode.
That won't be till the next time, probably.
Okay.
this one is called Spread. Did you guys ever hear about that one?
No,
I did.
It's three issues so far. So it's Justin Jordan, and then it's drawn by Kyle Stram, who I recognize, but I can't think of what he's done. Strahm. Do you guys know him?
No.
No? Okay.
So.
Oh, no, actually, no, that's right. This is his first work, I think. And that's what I was so impressed about, because it's he's one of those really detailed artists like Ryan Ottley kind of thing. And basically... So this is after the Earth was taken over by this kind of virus, which is basically kind of like the movie Thing. Like, imagine like a blobby animal type thing, but it just grows and takes over the planet kind of thing, spreads, like the name. And it's about this character named No, who has a baby. And that's one thing I hate about this comic, is the fact that his name is No. It makes the dialogue sound really confusing or bad sometimes.
Sure.
It's very distracting. And I've heard that from my friend who likes it too. And it's very lone wolf and cubby almost.
Your friend.
Yeah, I think
we need more than just a oblique reference to your friend. We need credentials. We need to evaluate your friend's opinion, whether
Kevin
we're
knows
take
him.
Consideration.
Kevin knows him. It's my friend, Jim.
Wasn't he on a podcast we did ages ago?
Yeah.
So, Kevin, can we rely on Jim's opinion?
He loves Valiant.
Yeah, so that puts him, that's a good mark in his book, that's for sure.
I had a lifetime worth of Valiant in Baltimore a few weeks ago with Campbell and Taylor. God.
Must have been awesome.
So this tale is just, so the part, I don't know where he is in the world, or I forget, or who knows, but... It's snow, so it's like kind of a snowy type Earth, and it's just him having to deal with like Mad Max type bad guys, which is really cool because the third issue is as if it's a Mad Max comic almost, because he goes to this little like trader town and gets in trouble because it turns out some of them are cannibals and stuff. But I highly recommend this series. There's three issues so far. And if you like Justin Jordan stuff, his Luther Strode, you're going to love this for sure. It's a different artist, but it's a great artist for his first time work.
Who'd you say it was by?
It's Justin Jordan. No, Jordan, I mean, and Kyle Stram.
Right. Who's it published by? I meant. Sorry.
Oh, Image, sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Completely missed that. I'll have to check it out.
And it's an ongoing, as far as I know.
Aren't all Image well, not all of them. Well, a lot of them are like, hey, we're an ongoing until we're not.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get at least 12 issues.
Another comic I wanted to bring up is a little bit connected to Luther Strode 2 in that there's a pinup in the sixth issue of Legend of Luther Strode by this artist. And in the first issue of this comic, Trad Moore from Luther Strode does a pinup in this guy's comic. So there's some sort of connection there. And that is a independently published comic called Headlopper, which there are two issues out so far of. And this is by Andrew McLean, M-A-C-L-E-A-N. And these are available digitally through Comixology. And I assume they're available at regular retail-y outlets. Counting covers, because I'm looking at the digital file of each of them. The first issue is 36 pages and the second 59 pages. But again, that counts, you know, the cover and the frontispiece and that kind of thing. McLean's art, I should also say I met Andrew and his girlfriend or wife at the Boston Comic Con last month, and he's also friendly with our pal Monsta, John Cardinal, and his band of Beantown artists. And in Headlopper, I think, like I said, there's been two issues out so far. I think the art's more than adequate. It's pretty neat, actually, I think, even though there's a simplistic quality to it. There's not a lot of shading, detailing in that respect. But it really sets up an atmosphere that is fairly unique to the book. You get to see a lot of brushwork, a lot of brush strokes that make everything seem really fast-paced to me. And I wonder, knowing that Kevin said he read it, what he thinks of it, because I know he doesn't like fast reads. But the artistic lines suggested like a frenetic... like, I know that they were put down a lot more with a lot more... a lot less impulsively than they look. But everything just looks like it was just done really, you know, train of thought, just thrown down and fast. And it's cool. The first issue establishes like this badass Odin, Thor, Conan type, and he's got a way cool Magneto-ish helmet, and he's the Headlopper, and he carries around this severed witch head in a sack that is animated. It talks to him and gives him shit and stuff. It's pretty cool. And the second issue establishes this character that you've met into play and on his like adventure and stuff. I found it to be a really enjoyable package, especially for a completely self-published piece of work.
It's awesome. Jeez. I got this in the SPX bundle that was like $10 for 82 comics.
Yeah, I was
on
hoping
Comixology,
that...
so.
Oh, wow.
When I saw it there, I was like, oh, cool, Kevin's going to get to see this.
It's true.
Yeah, I heard about it before, and I'm like, oh, that looks really cool. I'm like, yeah, reading this, really enjoyable. It's just something about it is really fun, and maybe I'm into like Conan and all that type of stuff, and he's going around, and it's medieval times type of thing, and it's like a lot of cool monsters and stuff, so yeah, exciting.
Andrew, what do you have that ties into Luther Strode?
Andrew went home a long time ago.
Andrew's not here anymore.
Okay, no more Luther Strode stuff.
Last thing I should say about Headlopper is there's a bevy of pinups at the end of the first issue and the second, including like in the second one, Mike Mignola and Oming among them. So some big names are giving this some recognition.
I love a good pinup section where you get to see other artists do the characters.
Yeah, and some of them are really different, like nothing like...
That's what I like, yeah.
Yeah, like that's what makes it really interesting, too.
Andrew, can we pull you out of the void?
Sure. Well, if we're covering hot newcomers on the scene, there's this dynamite artist-writer called George Perez. that blew me away with his newest comic, Sirens from Boom.
Well, I thought when you said Diamond, I thought you were getting the company wrong at first.
That's sad.
I guess a booming new artist, if we're keeping our company names correct. So George Perez is back on the scene, and I think this might be his first independent work.
And I believe we're all pretty big fans of him.
What about Crimson Plague?
And wasn't there like a...
Saxon Violence?
Yeah. Yeah, he's had a few.
Well, it's the first one I have. And it's from, like I said, Boom Studios, and it's part one of six, and it's Sirens. So he's been embarked on a long tour of signing tour. So I went to a local LCS that was hosting him, and they were doing a Hero Initiative fundraiser as well. So I went and bought the regular one and then bought the comic store exclusive cover. And then he also had, I guess he uses models, so they were there, which was odd, so they signed the comic too for some. I'm like, yeah, sure, why not? It was just a weird, like, I'd never been. Normally it's like the writers and artists and everything, but let's get to the credits. It's written, illustrated, and created by George Perez. Colors by Leonardo. Yeah, we'll just go with that.
George Perez's Sirens.
This is going to be for people who like older comics in the sense that it's more densely packed.
Like 80s probably comics. Right?
Yeah, it's not going to... It should pass Kevin's stopwatch test.
Big time.
Yeah.
Kevin, did you pick this one up? Or you didn't?
No.
Okay. Yeah, it probably would take you too long to read, so you wouldn't like it. It's that sweet spot you have to
find. And it's not backwards.
Yeah. All the stuff like Headlopper, Titan, and Secret Voice, they all read relatively fast.
Yep. Oh, I give you credit.
Yeah, I think Titan's probably the slowest one of all of them, but sometimes it just depends how it comes out and everything.
You're coming around.
I hope not. I'll be reading those decompressed Marvel comics in 5 minutes again, and then I'll be like, ugh.
Now, Sirens, I started reading, but it was very dense, and I found myself picking up the pace by, like, sort of flipping through it and figuring I'm going to reread it when it gets further along the story.
Yeah, and it's really...
Does that make sense? Because then it'll be even more dense.
Yeah, it will be.
Yeah, but then I'll know if I care or not. Like, I'll think, you know what I mean? I'll see if it sticks or not as I'm flipping through it, and that's usually how new stories either grab me or don't.
What I also...
buy some $20 hardcover, and they'll be like, well, this wasn't good.
Well, the art's going to be fantastic either way.
You guys keep cutting off poor Andrew. To tie it back
into my Ditko talk, strange enough, he is not afraid of panels either.
No kidding.
I know a lot of people think of Perez for those elaborate sort of huge crowd scenes, but he also does a lot of the really nice detail facial expressions.
Oh, well, that's one thing I didn't like about this comic. I'm a big fan, but I didn't like his faces, I thought.
Yeah, did he zoom into someone's eye or something like that?
A lot of rubble, too. He's good for his rubble.
Yes.
So, you know, Perez is a detailed artist, but the storytelling is really, like, they throw you right in. It jumps time and space a lot. In the beginning, they don't put markers of the jumps, but then they quickly start noting when and where the jumps go. And that helped a little bit, because it's pretty jam-packed of story, because basically it's getting the band together. So they're all spread out through different, like I said, temporal and physical locations, so you get to where each of them go, and he always makes nice transitions between them. But I'm not gonna knock the coloring, but I wonder if maybe, I don't know, there was something that left me. I didn't know
it's
if maybe
heavy.
I would prefer like a tonal shading or something like that.
Just lighten the intensity of the colors overall. So you can see more of the black line. When you got that much detail crammed into those many panels on a page, you can't go with these color blends and stuff from one end of the colored shape or, you know, to the other end of the area. You got to go better. His stuff works better with flat colors. He rarely gives you a big blank area that lets a artistic colorist work some creativity. Just stick with your flat colors and let the, you know, in dynamicism of the pencils and inks tell the story.
Yeah, or flat colors. Yeah, because something about it was, and I didn't want to knock the colorist, but I just felt like it was taking away, and that could have maybe, like, just a black and white book, or like you say, flat colors or something would have helped, I think, improve it even more. But the cover, you know, it's the big wraparound full cover that gives you the Perez and full effect with lots of rubble, as Steve noted. I am probably, partly for my own how I consume media, I'm probably going to wait for trade for the rest of it. But I got to say, he is just the most polite, friendly, nicest man if you get a chance to meet him. I know I say that a lot, but it just seems like comics are really filled with very appreciative professionals. Like, there's a guy that was at the top of both the big two, and he could very well be dismissive or whatever, but he took time with everybody that I saw. I mean, maybe other people had different experiences, but I got to say, just a class act all around.
Absolutely. Every time I've met him in Boston last year and Baltimore this year, and he's a class act all the way around. Gives his time to the fans even before the bell rings for the con, and he's there all day long with a huge line doing his thing. And it's great. His charitable stuff, too, is awesome. With Hero, he was said to me that he is able to live well off of, you know, the royalties on all of the, you know, collected editions of all of his work that, you know, between DC and Marvel, there's so much out there on people's shelves, mine included. And so he's pretty much, he doesn't have to do any other work. So all the stuff that he does is for fun or for charity, really, which is cool.
Yeah, they were auctioning off a couple of sketches, again, for the Hero Initiative. The whole event was really just a fun. And it wasn't as crazy as I thought it was going to be, because I was partially deliberating not going just for, you know, some of these things can be so crazy. But I was pleasantly, it was a Wednesday night, which helped. So I'm like, oh, that's going to be the key of getting people away. And this episode will be too late, but I am going to the Long Beach Comic Con. So hopefully I'll have a report. That was the one that years ago I bought the lifetime pass to. So as long as, I don't know if it's going to outlast me or I'm going to outlast it, but as long as it's still around, I'll still be kicking on that. So
absolutely.
For our next episode, have a little con report for everybody.
Cool. That's this weekend?
That is this weekend, but whenever this episode comes out, it will be in the past, unless this episode goes up a lot faster than I can possibly anticipate.
While you're there, it's going to go up. How about that?
Boy, that's pretty fancy. This is modern technology.
That's another episode of Indie Comic Book Noise, gang. We went around the horn quite a bit there and got a bunch of books shared with y'all, and we will gather again very soon and continue pumping them out, because that's what we do around here once we're in the groove. And I'm in the groove.
You're in the groove again?
And we got to head towards our Halloween anniversary episode, where it'll be 1 year. Woohoo!
It's crazy.
1 year and 350 episodes.
Daily episodes.
Thanks,
guys. And thanks for everybody for listening, too. We really appreciate it.
Indeed. All right, quit complaining about cosplayers and cons and go read some indie comics.
It will all hurt.
Later.
Well, he went down to dinner in his Sunday best. Excitable boy, they all said. And he popped a pot roast all over his chest. Excitable boy, they all said. Well, he's just an excitable boy. Took in the 4 a.m. show at the Clark. Excitable boy, they all said. And he bit the usher's leg in the dark. Excitable boy, they all said. Well, he's just an excitable boy.
Ooh, wow. Ooh, excitable boy. Ooh,
10 long years they let him out of the home. Excitable boy, they all said. And he dug up her grave and built a cage with her bones. Excitable boy, they all said. Well, he's just an excitable boy.